Don Juanism. If it were sufficient to love, things would be too easy. The more one loves, the stronger the absurd grows. It is not through lack of love that Don Juan goes from woman to woman. It is ridiculous to represent him as a mystic in quest of total love. But it is indeed because he loves them with the same passion, and each time with his whole self, that he must repeat his gift and his profound quest, whence each woman hopes to give him what no one has ever given him. Each time they are utterly wrong, and merely manage to make him feel the need of that repetition. "At last," exclaims one of them, "I have given you love." Can we be surprised that Don Juan laughs at this? "At last, no," he says, "but once more." Why should it be essential to love rarely in order to love much? Is Don Juan melancholy? This is not likely. I shall barely have recourse to the legend. That laugh, the conquering insolence, that playfulness and love of the theater are all clear and joyous. Every healthy creature tends to multiply itself. So it is with Don Juan. But furthermore, melancholy people have two reasons for being so. They don't know, or they hope. Don Juan knows and does not hope. He reminds one of those artists who know their limits, never go beyond them, and in that precarious interval in which they take their spiritual stand, enjoy all the wonderful ease of masters. And that is indeed genius. The intelligence that knows its frontiers. Up to the frontier of physical death, Don Juan is ignorant of melancholy. The moment he knows, his laugh bursts forth and makes one forgive everything. He was melancholy at the time when he hoped. Today, on the mouth of that woman, he recognizes the bitter and comforting taste of the only knowledge. Bitter? Barely. That necessary imperfection that makes happiness perceptible. It is quite false to try to see in Don Juan a man brought up on Ecclesiastes, for nothing is vanity to him except the hope of another life. He proves this because he gambles that other life against heaven itself. Longing for desire killed by satisfaction, that commonplace of the impotent man does not belong to him. That is all right for Faust, who believed in God enough to sell himself to the devil. For Don Juan the thing is simpler. Molina's burlador ever replies to the threats of hell, "What a long respite you give me!" What comes after death is futile, and what a long succession of days for whoever knows how to be alive. Faust craved worldly goods. The poor man had only to stretch out his hand. It already amounted to selling his soul when he was unable to gladden it. As for satiety, Don Juan insists upon it, on the contrary. If he leaves a woman, it is not absolutely because he has ceased to desire her. A beautiful woman is always desirable. But he desires another, and no, this is not the same thing. This life gratifies his every wish, and nothing is worse than losing it. This madman is a great wise man. But men who live on hope do not thrive in this universe where kindness yields to generosity, affection to virile silence, and communion to solitary courage. And all hasten to say, "He was a weakling, an idealist, or a saint." One has to disparage the greatness that insults. People are sufficiently annoyed, or that smile of complicity that debases what it admires, by Don Juan's speeches and by that same remark that he uses on all women. But to anyone who seeks quantity in his joys, the only thing that matters is efficacy. What is the use of complicating the passwords that have stood the test? No one, neither the woman nor the man, listens to them, but rather to the voice that pronounces them. They are the rule, the convention, and the courtesy. After they are spoken, the most important still remains to be done. Don Juan is already getting ready for it. Why should he give himself a problem in morality? He is not like Milos Izmañara, who damns himself through a desire to be a saint. Hell, for him, is a thing to be provoked. He has but one reply to divine wrath, and that is human honor. "I have honor," he says to the commander, "and I am keeping my promise because I am a knight." But it would be just as great an error to make an immoralist of him. In this regard, he is like everyone else. He has the moral code of his likes and dislikes. Don Juan can be properly understood only by constant reference to what he commonly symbolizes, the ordinary seducer and the sexual athlete. He is an ordinary seducer, except for the difference that he is conscious, and that is why he is absurd. A seducer who has become lucid will not change for all that. Seducing is his condition in life. Only in novels does one change condition or become better. Yet it can be said that at the same time nothing is changed and everything is transformed. What Don Juan realizes in action is an ethic of quantity, whereas the saint, on the contrary, tends toward quality. Not to believe in the profound meaning of things belongs to the absurd man. As for those cordial or wonderstruck faces, he eyes them, stores them up, and does not pause over them. Time keeps up with him. The absurd man is he who is not apart from time. Don Juan does not think of collecting women. He exhausts their number, and with them his chances of life. Collecting amounts to being capable of living off one's past. But he rejects regret, that other form of hope. He is incapable of looking at portraits. Is he selfish for all that? In his way, probably. But here, too, it is essential to understand one another. There are those who are made for living and those who are made for loving. At least Don Juan would be inclined to say so, but he would do so in a very few words such as he is capable of choosing. For the love we are speaking of here is clothed in illusions of the eternal. As all the specialists in passion teach us, there is no eternal love but what is thwarted. There is scarcely any passion without struggle. Such a love culminates only in the ultimate contradiction of death. One must be Varter or nothing. There, too, there are several ways of committing suicide, one of which is the total gift and forgetfulness of self. Don Juan, as well as anyone else, knows that this can be stirring. But he is one of the very few who know that this is not the important thing. He knows just as well that those who turn away from all personal life through a great love enrich themselves, perhaps, but certainly impoverish those their love has chosen. A mother or a passionate wife necessarily has a closed heart, for it is turned away from the world. A single emotion, a single creature, a single face, but all is devoured. Quite a different love disturbs Don Juan, and this one is liberating. It brings with it all the faces in the world, and its tremor comes from the fact that it knows itself to be mortal. Don Juan has chosen to be nothing. For him it is a matter of seeing clearly. We call love what binds us to certain creatures only by reference to a collective way of seeing for which books and legends are responsible. But of love, I know only that mixture of desire, affection, and intelligence that binds me to this or that creature. That compound is not the same for another person. I do not have the right to cover all these experiences with the same name. This exempts one from conducting them with the same gestures. The absurd man multiplies here again what he cannot unify. Thus he discovers a new way of being which liberates him at least as much as it liberates those who approach him. There is no noble love but that which recognizes itself to be both short-lived and exceptional. All those deaths and all those rebirths gathered together, as in a sheaf, make up for Don Juan the flowering of his life. It is his way of giving and of vivifying. I let it be decided whether or not one can speak of selfishness. I think at this point of all those who absolutely insist that Don Juan be punished, not only in another life, but even in this one. I think of all those tales, legends, and laughs about the aged Don Juan. But Don Juan is already ready. To a conscious man, old age and what it portends are not a surprise. Indeed, he is conscious only insofar as he does not conceal its horror from himself. There was in Athens a temple dedicated to old age. Children were taken there. As for Don Juan, the more people laugh at him, the more his figure stands out. Thereby he rejects the one the romantics lent him. No one wants to laugh at that tormented, pitiful Don Juan. He is pitied. Heaven itself will redeem him. But that's not it. In the universe of which Don Juan has a glimpse, ridicule, too, is included. He would consider it normal to be chastised. That is the rule of the game, and indeed, it is typical of his nobility to have accepted all the rules of the game. Yet he knows he is right, and that there can be no question of punishment. A fate is not a punishment. That is his crime, and how easy it is to understand why the men of God call down punishment on his head. He achieves a knowledge without illusions, which negates everything they profess. Loving and possessing, conquering and consuming, that is his way of knowing. There is significance in that favorite scriptural word that calls the carnal act knowing. He is their worst enemy to the extent that he is ignorant of them. A chronicler relates that the true Burlador died assassinated by Franciscans who wanted to put an end to the excesses and blasphemies of Don Juan, whose birth assured him impunity. Then they proclaimed that heaven had struck him down. No one has proved that strange end, nor has anyone proved the contrary. But without wondering if it is probable, I can say that it is logical. I want merely to single out at this point the word birth and to play on words. It was the fact of living that assured his innocence. It was from death alone that he derived a guilt now become legendary. What else does that stone commander signify? That cold statue set in motion to punish the blood and courage that dared to think. All the powers of eternal reason, of order, of universal morality, all the foreign grandeur of a god open to wrath are summed up in him. That gigantic and soulless stone merely symbolizes the forces that Don Juan negated forever. But the commander's mission stops there. The thunder and lightning can return to the imitation heaven whence they were called forth. The real tragedy takes place quite apart from them. No, it was not under a stone hand that Don Juan met his death. I'm inclined to believe in the legendary bravado, in that mad laughter of the healthy man provoking a non-existent god. But above all, I believe that on that evening when Don Juan was waiting at Anna's, the commander didn't come, and that after midnight, the blasphemer must have felt the dreadful bitterness of those who have been right. I accept even more readily the account of his life that has him eventually burying himself in a monastery. Not that the edifying aspect of the story can be considered probable. What refuge can he go ask of God? But this symbolizes rather the logical outcome of a life completely imbued with the absurd, the grim ending of an existence turned toward short-lived joys. At this point, sensual pleasure winds up in asceticism. It is essential to realize that they may be, as it were, the two aspects of the same destitution. What more ghastly image can be called up than that of a man betrayed by his body, who simply because he did not die in time, lives out the comedy while awaiting the end, face to face with that God he does not adore, serving him as he served life, kneeling before a void and arms outstretched toward a heaven without eloquence that he knows to be also without depth. I see Don Juan in a cell of one of those Spanish monasteries lost on a hilltop, and if he contemplates anything at all, it is not the ghosts of past loves, but perhaps, through a narrow slit in the sun-baked wall, some silent Spanish plain, a noble, soulless land in which he recognizes himself. Yes, it is on this melancholy and radiant image that the curtain must be rung down. The ultimate end, awaited but never desired, the ultimate end is negligible.